I will little explain few more steps in Anapanasati, mindful on breathing. This is actually well explained by the Buddha in various suttas, particularly in Majjhima Nikaya. There is one sutta called Anapanasati Sutta, where Buddha explains complete Anapanasati in 16 steps. And again, there is a separate collection of suttas dealing with Anapanasati. That's also in Samyutta Nikaya. A series of suttas are collected together, discussing about various aspects of Anapanasati. So Anapanasati is one of the very common practice among the Buddhist as well as non-Buddhist. And actually, it's well known for developing Samatha, and it is again well known for developing Vipassana. So actually, Anapanasati has both benefits. Actually, you can develop concentration or collected mind, as well as you can enhance your wisdom using Anapanasati. Therefore, unlike certain other meditation techniques, Anapanasati has both benefits. So at the beginning, we may be more oriented towards developing fair amount of concentration, fair amount of collected mind, because that becomes kind of a prerequisite for Vipassana. So Buddha explains it in a very simple terms, satova asasati, satova pasasati. So that means mindfully one breathes in and mindfully one breathes out. So there are no any complicated attachment here, but rather Buddha asks us to be aware of breathing process. So when body breathes in, so we are aware, now the body is breathing in. When body breathes out, we are aware, now body breathes out. So we let the body to breathe. We are not, it is not necessary for us to get involved or to interfere with the process. Rather, we let the body to breathe very naturally. Probably you might have noticed, once we start to aware of this process, slowly probably we can understand, we are putting our hand, we are disturbing the process, we are interfering in the process. This can happen. Actually, all these years, the body was breathing and we were involving so many other activities. But right now, once we started to be mindful about this process, we start to control that as well. So this is something we can recognize. So we don't need to be very critical about it, because in a later stage, we can slowly take off our hand. We can allow the body to breathe naturally without getting involved, without interfering in the process. So in order to have this balance, it may take several days or several weeks even. Because once we started to be aware of this mindful breathing, probably we might even start to interfere the process. We are too much effortful sometimes. We are trying to control the process. So this becomes little disturbing in the process. But slowly we understand the proper dose, correct amount of effort we can understand later. And at that time, we allow the body to naturally breathe. At that time, we know what is the proper dose, correct dose, or what we know, how effortlessly breathing happens. We can feel it. So this is something happens with experience. You can't do it just by reading books, but rather once you are aware how breathing happens, and you also have done certain mistakes by exerting too much effort, and you yourself get to know, I don't need to put too much effort. Body is breathing by itself. I simply have to watch it. Simply have to be aware of it in a very silent, soft, gentle manner. So in actually this whole mindfulness process, there is this beautiful balance. We are not too much involved with the process. At the same time, we are not unmindful about the process. We are mindful, but in a very delicate balance. So we are learning how to maintain this balance. So sometimes we are able to maintain this balance. After a while, we are too much involved. And after a while, we have missed the whole process. So likewise, the ups and downs happens. We are sort of wavering between these two extremes. But once we are in the proper middle, then we are in a very beautiful, comfortable, frictionless balance. There the breathing happens very naturally and we are very mindfully watching it. That is very beautiful. So at that time Buddha tells us, okay, now you be aware about the in-breath, be aware about the out-breath. And now probably we can even recognize certain differences between in-breath and out-breath. Say for example, in-breath is cooler, out-breath is warmer. So these are very slight differences probably we can recognize. Actually, this recognition can only happen when the mindfulness is fairly established. Because if the mind is wandering, say after a couple of breaths, if mind wanders towards the past, then we lost several minutes in the past. Then again, we establish mindfulness. Again, we watch several breaths. Again, mind drifts to the future. Again, we lost for several minutes. Again, we get to know that we are not with the breath. Again, we establish mindfulness. So at this kind of a situation, we are in a sort of a struggle at the beginning. But later, as because of our effort, we may be able to continuously watch the breath. So say about 20 breaths, 50 breaths, 100 breaths. Now we are with the process. At that time, so we are learning the balance. We are feeling the sense in the balance. Now we know the art. We know how to be aware of incoming breath. We know how to be aware of outgoing breath. Another incoming breath. Another outgoing breath. So likewise, we are maintaining a very, very relaxed position closer to the nostril. And we are capable of feeling it, being aware of it. And at that time, probably we can recognize, okay, in-breath is little cooler, out-breath is little warmer. So this is an understanding. This is a direct experience. You are not learning it by a book or you are not copying someone else's experience. Rather, you directly feel it. You directly experience, now in-breath is cooler, out-breath is warmer. Probably you can even experience, okay, in-breath happens in left nostril, out-breath happens in right nostril. Okay, in-breath happens in both nostrils, out-breath happens only in, say, right nostril. Likewise, there are even slight differences. Sometimes in-breath is longer, out-breath is shorter. So these are slight differences that you can recognize as your mindfulness refines. So that's why I said, first you need to establish mindfulness. Once the mindfulness is established, then only we can recognize these refined details. So this is where actually we are introducing clear comprehension, or what we call sampajanya. So we are taking another friend to the whole process. So once the mindfulness is established, now we know we need to bring another aspect of mindfulness, that is the sampajanya, that is clearly knowing now in-breath is little cooler, out-breath is little warmer, comparatively warm. In-breath is longer, out-breath is shorter. In-breath happens in particular nostril, out-breath happens with the other nostril. So likewise, we can clearly know. Then probably we can even start to clearly know consecutive in-breaths and consecutive out-breaths. Typically, we think, rationally we think, all the in-breaths are exactly similar. All the out-breaths are exactly similar. Probably in-breath and out-breath may have slight differences, but all in-breaths are 100% similar. All out-breaths are 100% similar. But Buddha says it is not. So now Buddha giving us another exercise. So that is the second stage of Anapanasati, where Buddha asks us to know what is the difference between two consecutive in-breaths. They may not be identical. One in-breath may be longer compared to another in-breath. One out-breath may be longer when compared to the another out-breath. So likewise, we are scrutinizing the whole process. We are clearly knowing the whole process. Then we can recognize, okay, there are certain in-breaths very long. It happens in a long period of time. And certain in-breaths quickly happens. It finished. Quickly it has finished. So compared to the previous in-breath, so this in-breath has quickly finished. So I know this is shorter. Present one is shorter compared to the previous one. Similarly, for the out-breath, so Buddha says, Digangva pasasanto, digang pasasamiti pajanati. Pasangva pasasanto, rasam pasasamiti pajanati. Likewise, Buddha explains very precisely all these subtle differences, where one is encouraged to recognize these subtle differences. Then you can understand our clear comprehension further improves. You can't recognize this lengthwise, whether certain breaths are happening in a comparatively longer period or shorter period, without having proper mindfulness, without having enough clear comprehension. Because it is the breath itself is a subtle phenomena. It is not very gross phenomena, but a subtle phenomena. In order to recognize these subtle differences of in-breath and out-breath, you need to have a very precise mindfulness, very clear knowing. So this is another exercise Buddha asking us to deal with. So assume that if you are able to establish yourself on this exercise, then Buddha gives us another challenge. And he says, usually what we experience is only the middle part of the breath. The beginning part is very subtle. It is not immediately the middle part happens, but there's a very natural, very slight, very soft, gradual progress happens in the beginning. And then only it comes to a certain middle range where we start to perceive. Then only we can sense it. Then again, after a while, it almost like disappeared, but it is naturally disappearing. The ending part also is a natural tapering off. Naturally, it is slowing down, calming down, disappearing. So there is a kind of a, we can say, kind of a beginning, and then the middle, and then kind of a end. You can't actually demarcate precisely where the beginning, where the middle, where the end, but rather what is expected is to know that there's a very slight, very smooth, very soft beginning. And then it comes to a fair amount of intensity, then we are in the middle range. There we can feel it properly. And after a while, then it's going to the next half, that is the disappearing half, the ending half. So therefore, Buddha asks us to know the complete cycle of this in-breath. And before the beginning of the out-breath, there even could be a slight gap. Just after the end of in-breath, before the beginning of in-breath, the next out-breath, there could be a slight gap. So if once we establish mindfulness with a very precise, clear comprehension, then we would be able to catch that as well. We would be able to feel, know that gap as well. And then the out-breath begins, the beginning of the out-breath, the middle of the out-breath, the end of the out-breath. Like in the in-breath, similarly, we can recognize three regions, the beginning part, the middle part, and the ending part of the out-breath. And just before the beginning of next in-breath, there is a slight gap. That is between the end of the out-breath and the beginning of the next in-breath. So we may be able to even feel that as well. So this whole cycle, beginning of in-breath, middle of in-breath, end of in-breath, slight gap, beginning of out-breath, middle of out-breath, end of out-breath, slight gap. Again, beginning of in-breath, middle of in-breath, ending of in-breath. So likewise, now we are knowing the whole process. So Buddha asks us to know this whole process. Sabbakaya patisangvedi asa sissamiti sikkhati. Sabbakaya patisangvedi pasa sissamiti sikkhati. So actually you can't do this process or know this process without completely established mindfulness. You have to have a very precise mindfulness in order to know this process. You actually, the mind wandering is almost disappeared. Now mind sort of enjoying this process. Now the breath has become very beautiful. At the beginning, it's very boring. You feel sleepy, you fall asleep, and mind wanders, and your body aches, and a lot of difficulties are there. All such difficulties are no more once you reach this stage. Actually, you have to go through a lot of difficulties in order to reach this stage, even though we are discussing this several stages within several minutes. In order to reach this stage, it may take sometimes even months. So don't think this happens all of a sudden. So it is a continuous effort, continuous practice, which will take one to this kind of experience. So it's a natural kind of a gradual process. Don't expect yourself to know all these things immediately. Suppose you are a beginner and you simply have to establish mindfulness. That's all. You can't go to these levels, these different stages immediately. We simply have to satovasa sati, satopasa sati. Simply we know, or we are mindfully breathe in, mindfully breathe out. That could be the exercise for several weeks. And once we are well established in that stage, then naturally you will be carried forward to the next stage. You don't need to think about it. You can't jump to the next stage. Even though you might have heard the next stage is this, you can't jump to that because no point. Experientially, if you are not competent enough, if the mind has not yet grown enough, you can't go to the next stage. So it's a very practical process. Once we are gradually developing mindfulness, and once it has reached the threshold of that region, then the next region will sort of blossom. Then we are in the next stage. So it has naturally happened. We can't push the mind to happen. So you can't force the mind to go to the next stage. Rather, you have to very mindfully, silently allow it to happen. So therefore, we need to have a lot of patience in this process. You can't do it in a rush. Actually, this is a kind of enjoying process rather than kind of a striving. At the beginning, it appears like kind of a striving because a lot of thoughts are coming, pains are coming, a lot of disturbances are coming. So you have to struggle. But later, once the body starts to support and you are able to find out a proper place, then actually fair amount of calmness going to experience. At that time, now you know the art. Now you know how to play the guitar, something like that. Suppose you are given a guitar to play, and you might have seen in the musical shows, in the TV, that people are playing the guitar and with various music and very beautiful and fantastic. And immediately, if you are trying to take such kind of a skill, it won't happen. You also have to start from the beginning. You have to start from one note, then go to another note. So likewise, you have to go through so many exercises in order to become a good guitarist. So similarly, here also, you can't recognize all these different advanced stages without going through the first stages. So we first have to know what is the current stage of my mind. And I simply have to go through the process related to my mind. So if it is wandering, so let me bring it back and establish again and again on breath. So then after a while, mind itself will recognize, okay, it is all right to be with the breath rather than jumping. So it is kind of a calm to be with the breath. It is comfortable to be with the breath. It's beautiful to breathe with the breath. So mind itself has to understand it. Now say, for example, you are coming to a new home. Suppose you are changing your place. And once you come to a new place, you feel a little awkward because it's difficult. You don't know where are the places. You don't know where are the bathroom. You don't know the storeroom. So all the say furniture is here and there. So it takes some time for you to familiarize with the setup. So likewise, this breath also kind of a home for the mind. Mind was finding so many homes outside, going to the past, going to the future, going to various other experiences. But now you are introducing a new home to the mind. Now, it may take some time for the mind to recognize this new home and mind to know the benefits of this new home. And once the mind knows that, then it by itself, it starts to stay with this place, starts to stay at home. Here, at this very moment, mind is with the breath. Right now, it is with the in-breath. Out-breath has gone. Now it is with the in-breath, completely, wholeheartedly, 100%. Now, out-breath happens. Mind is with the out-breath, not with the in-breath. In-breath has gone. And not with the next in-breath, but currently out-breath happens wholeheartedly, 100% with the out-breath. So if we can do like this, then actually mind starts to enjoy this process. Why it can't enjoy? Because it thinks enjoyment is available outside. So it is going to the past experience. Suppose you had a good time with your friends, you had a good time with some seeing a movie. So it is trying to enjoy thinking about those past experiences. Maybe planning about the future, thinking that enjoyment is possible in the future. So mind tries to enjoy, shifting between past and the future. But once it has recognized enjoyment is available, kind of a calm, serene enjoyment is available by just being with the breath, then mind is very comfortably stay with the breath. So we have to educate the mind. We have to familiarize the mind for a while. So then mind knows that. It is not that we know. We might have heard so many sermons. We have read so many books. But still mind doesn't know. So we have to teach the mind how to be with one breath. How to be with another breath. How to be with in-breath. How to be with out-breath. We have to educate the mind. We have to teach the mind. So this teaching process is like a teaching to a child. So you have to do it very carefully. You have to do it very patiently. Because the rate that you expect is not the rate the child is learning. Sometimes we may be having so many high hopes from the child. But child is growing in a particular pace. So we have to allow it. Similarly, our mind also takes some time to grow. So we have to give some time for the mind to grow naturally. So you can't force the mind to come immediately to the next stage. So you have to allow it to grow naturally. You have to be very sympathetic. You have to be very patient. You have to be in a way very forgiving. When mind again and again go back to the unnecessary distractions, again and again you have to bring it back. Like a naughty child going to various other activities. So a kind parent again and again brings him back. Because the parent knows, the mother knows that this is the good thing for the mind, good thing for the child. Similarly, you also have to look after the mind at these early stages. Because mind doesn't know. Mind has its own kind of agenda and it is jumping here and there according to that agenda. But now you are introducing a new program to this mind, new agenda to this mind. So this is where we have to be very careful, to be very patient. Otherwise, we can't do it. So it may take several hours, several weeks, several months to achieve this. So take your time and even allow the mind to do its mistakes. And by doing mistakes, we learn. We know, I mean, and suppose in the previous session, I did a lot of mistakes. I have exerted too much effort. So I felt little sort of tensed. I got some headache. I become drowsy. My mind was wandering. So likewise, and maybe a lot of body aches happen. So these are all experiences, all bottlenecks, a lot of obstacles. So we are learning all these things, going through this whole process. And the next session, so you are going with some experience. So you know, I mean, how to sit. At the previous session, I was maintaining a, suppose, extremely comfortable position. So after a while, but I mean, you start to nod, you start to sleep. Now, you know, I mean, if I am trying to give too much comfort, then body starts to go to sleep. Mind starts to sleep. So I can't give that much of comfort. I have to maintain a little balanced posture. It is not extremely comfortable and it is also not uncomfortable. So this is the kind of a middle region we need to recognize even with the posture. And when we are aware of the breath also, we have to maintain this proper balance, proper or right amount of effort. If you are putting too much effort, that itself can cause the mind to become restless. If you are not putting enough effort, then mind go to sleep. So this is in a way kind of a balance. So you have to learn it with trial and error. You can learn, you can go through a lot of books, but in order to practically experience it, you yourself have to know it. It's like gear balancing. Now, in the good old days, you know that we have the manual gear vehicles. Suppose that you have to balance the vehicle while you are driving on a mountain, on a hilltop. So at that time, you have to give the proper balance. You have to give enough gas as well as you have to properly give the clutch. So likewise, this is a very smooth balance. Similarly, in this meditation as well, so you have to maintain this proper balance. If you are putting too much effort, then it can cause restlessness. If you are not giving enough effort, it can cause mind to be drowsy, become sort of lazy. So these are actually some trial and error experiences. Slowly, slowly we are learning. So once we learn that, so this past experiences or past learning can be applied to this new session. So slowly we know what is the right amount. We know how to sit, what is the best posture, and even what is the best time for meditation. Suppose you were trying in the early morning. You were trying in the just after the lunch. You may be trying during the evening. You may be trying in the night. But among all these different time slots, you might recognize, okay, maybe the evening is the best time slot for me. Maybe the night time is the best time slot for me. So you can recognize even that. So actually from person to person, these time slots also vary. And even depending on your health, your situation, your environment, all these things vary. So there are many parameters controlling this whole process. So we are actually in a learning process. I think it is enough explanation I have given just to give you some idea about mindfulness on breathing. And maybe Chamila can take over to proceed.
Bhante, we've actually received quite a number of questions this time.
Right.
So there are, I think, 8 questions in total.
Right.
5 of them are on practice and 3 of them are sort of theory questions.
Yeah.
So question number 1. Bhante, sometimes I try really hard to meditate, to focus on my breathing and let the thoughts and other sensations go. But the harder I try to let go, the more I am distracted. And then I give up easily, even though I know how good I feel after meditation. The times I find more easy to meditate are those times I'm relaxed and happy. Sometimes I set my alarm early to meditate or want to meditate before bed, but I am sleepy and easily distractible. So I try to put more effort, but it doesn't work. Or if I'm trying to solve a problem and keep thinking about it, then I struggle to let those things go in my mind. What can I do or say to myself during these times, or even before I close my eyes, to improve my practice? Thank you.
Yeah, I think suppose you are starting your session in the morning, then probably you can start with little walking. I mean, immediately, suppose once you get up from your bed, if you start to cross-legged and start to close your eyes and meditate, body might not be sort of warmed up. So body is not yet in a active position to continue with meditation. Because, you know, in order to be mindful, your mind has to be active, not in an inactive position. So in order to activate the mind, this walking meditation is an excellent method. So rather than immediately sit, rather you can do a walk. Say if you find outside environment, if it is quite comfortable, or maybe you can find out a passage in your home, and you can do up and down walking. And knowing, okay, this is the left foot touching the ground. This is the right foot touching the ground. This is the left foot touching the ground. This is the right foot touching the ground. So likewise, basically, you are establishing mindfulness while walking. This walking is an active process. It is not a passive process. So you have to maintain the balance of the body. You have to open your eyes. You are walking while keeping eyes open. And you are intentionally walking from this place to the other place. So likewise, this is a kind of an active process. So this activates the mind. It further activates the mind. So once you are able to activate the mind, establish mindfulness, so that established mindfulness can be brought to the sitting session. So now you are sitting comfortably, closing your eyes. So there are already established mindfulness with you. Now you are refining it. Now you are fine-tuning it. So therefore, I recommend rather than immediately trying to sit, you go for a walk and activate the mind, improve the efficiency, and then come back and sit. And then it can grow well. And at the same time, wandering mind is a natural process and you can't immediately stop it. So if you are trying to go for a kind of a ideal situation, it may not happen immediately. So don't put too much ideals to the situation. Accept the way it is. And suppose you are expecting your mind to be with 100 breaths unbroken, it may not happen. Just try to be with, say, 3 breaths unbroken. It's a kind of a achievable target. Then maybe 4 breaths. Then maybe 5 breaths. So likewise, you have to teach the child with his capacity. Even though you are a grown up, when you are teaching a child, you have to come back to the child level and teach. So similarly, even though you know you need to maintain mindfulness 100 breaths, 200 breaths, you can't do it immediately. So you have to come back to the level where the mind is. The mind has too much wandering, so you understand, okay, mind is so naughty. Mind is still prefer various distractions, so let it play a little bit. At the same time, I'm trying to tame it as well. I'm also not giving it up, but rather, I am trying to then and there establish mindfulness. Several breaths, again, distractions happen. Again, I bring it back. Again, several breaths. Again, distractions happen. Again, I bring it back. Again, it's distraction. So it's a kind of a trial and error method. It's a kind of a strenuous effort actually we have to go through at the beginning. You have to patiently continue this. I hope with this you can win the whole process. Chatur, back to you.
Question number two. Avasarai Bande. With our busy lives, when do I find some time to start the practice? What type of preparations should I do? Obviously, I understand that I need to find a quiet space, but is there anything else that I should do as preparation work? That's the end of the question.
Yeah. So if you one thing is that if you have some urgent works, better finish them before you start meditation. Suppose you have some urgent call to do. Suppose you have urgent email to write. Suppose you have urgent report to write. So if you have some urgent, so to speak, urgent projects to do, better finish them and then come back to meditation. Because otherwise, again and again, this urgent task come and bug you. Urgent task come and disturb you. So that is one thing. And again, you can have a good sort of walk before start meditation. As I said to the previous question, so don't think that meditation is just sitting on the cushion and then watch the breath. There are so many other activities which we can contribute to this whole process. Meditation is, I mean, don't think the 100% of meditation happens in the cushion. It is not. You can be mindful on various postures. And Buddha particularly mentioned about four main postures. While standing, you can be mindful. While walking, you can be mindful. While sitting, you can be mindful. And while lying down, you can be mindful. So these are the four main postures. You can establish mindfulness while be there. Say you are driving. Rather than listening to music and rather than looking around, you can simply drive. You know how you are holding the steering wheel. You know how you are holding the steering wheel. And you know how you are changing the gears. And you know when you are looking at the side glasses. You know how you are looking in the front. So likewise, there are certain activities happening right now while driving. So you can simply drive when you are driving a car. Suppose you are listening to another person. So rather than thinking various other things and listen, can't you wholeheartedly listen to this person? Suppose your wife is telling something to you. Suppose your husband is telling something to you. So rather than thinking about the office, rather than thinking about the past and the future, can you be a good listener? So this is another place where you can establish mindfulness. And suppose you are hearing a Dhamma sermon. So rather than you are eating and hearing a Dhamma sermon, you are watching something and then hear Dhamma sermon. So you are wholeheartedly hear the Dhamma sermon. So doing one thing at a time. So this is something that we have to introduce at the beginning. Doing one thing at a time. So we used to be too smart. We think that we are too smart and we are trying to do multitasking. So we can't develop mindfulness in a multitasking fashion at the beginning. Mindfulness, once it is grown, it may use some sort of a skill to handle multitask. But at the beginning, you have to do one thing at a time. So therefore, don't get discouraged. Rather, try to do one thing at a time and that done well. And try to appreciate the little winning. Suppose you are able to watch 3 breaths. Happy about it. Don't expect 100 breaths. Just 3 breaths. Happy about it. And next time, suppose you are able to watch 5 breaths. Happy about it. Because we have to reward the mind. Then only like a kid. Suppose your child become say third in the class. Now you have to give a little reward, some sort of an appreciation. Then only he get encouraged. Similarly, then probably he can try to become the first in the class the next time, because he was rewarded, he was appreciated, he was praised. So like similarly, our mind. Once the mind is capable of establishing mindfulness for 5 breaths, just appreciate that. Give some reward. Give some praise to the mind. And then try to go for the 6 breaths. Try to go for 7 breaths. So likewise, we have to do it in a very gradually. Then we can achieve the target. Chatu, back to you.
Bhante, we keep receiving more questions, which is good. So I think we got another 2 extra that came. Anyway, so we're up to question number 3. Vandami Bhante, how does one control the mind jumping about with the thoughts when I'm trying to concentrate on my breathing or my feet? That's the end of the question.
Actually, you are not supposed to control the mind. Rather, you have to wholeheartedly experience the present sensation, so to speak. Suppose you are walking. Now, don't try to control the mind. Rather, check where the foot is touching the ground. Is it the left foot? Is it the right foot? If left foot is touching the ground, now in exact location, where is it? Is it the heel? Is it the toes? So likewise, now we are refining our attention on where it is happening. Forget about the mind. Then slowly, slowly, our mind energy has to be brought in order to do this. In order to achieve this, we are sort of bringing our attention to this present experience. Then slowly, the target will achieve. Then the mind will get concentrated automatically. We don't need to worry about the wandering mind. Rather, we are sort of giving some exercises at the present moment. Right now, where the touching happens. Is it the left foot? Is it the right foot? If it is left foot, okay, whether is it heel or is it the toes? Is the left lifting or is it moving? Or is it placing? So likewise, so the current process, the kamatahana, is the strategy to develop or to avoid the distraction. So we can't battle with the distraction. Rather, we are improving the attention at the kamatahana, at the primary object. And once we are able to establish mindfulness on the primary object, so the distractions will become lesser and lesser. Yep.
Bhante, so question number 4. Venerable Bhante, if I have just 1 hour per week, whenever I get a chance as a beginner, should I try practicing mindful walking or mindful sitting, or divide the time half and half between the two practices? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I prefer the third option. Divide the mind, divide the time half and half. So you can spend half an hour walking and half an hour sitting. Actually, even if you think half an hour is not enough for walking, even you can spend more time on walking, because immediately trying sitting is not advisable, because you are not yet prepared enough. So therefore, establishing mindfulness while walking is much, much beneficial at the beginning. And then that develop mindfulness can be further refined by introducing sitting. So maybe half an hour walking, half an hour sitting. Or maybe 45 minutes walking and then 15 minutes sitting. So likewise, you can adjust yourself. I am not recommending this for the whole life. So, I mean, it may vary. So after some time, you may recognize, okay, now mind is fairly settled. Now I can sit. So at that time, probably 15 minutes walking, maybe even 45 minutes sitting. So likewise, this can adjust according to the situation. Yeah, Chatu, back to you.
Yeah, Bhante, question number 5. Venerable Bhante, I have been practicing sitting meditation for about a year now, more regularly at the beginning and a few times a week for the last 4 or so months, for about 30 minutes in each sitting. Sometimes, about 15 to 20 minutes into my practice, I feel the coarseness of the breath becoming very subtle. My mind quietens and I get a sensation as if I'm inhaling mint. I guess it's sort of like the herb. It's like a stream of ice water at the back of my throat slash nose area, traveling up and down. I then focus on this sensation and it disappears after a while, and I go back to focusing on my breath. However, even during this time, the mind isn't completely quiet. I get thoughts entering my mind, but I'm able to dismiss those thoughts very quickly. I would like to know what this is and if it's correct to shift my focus to the sensation and revert back to the breath when it disappears. That's the end of the question.
Actually, so if you think that the current concentration is fair enough to observe these other sensations properly, then you can go for that. Otherwise, you better be with the breath and further refine the mindfulness, further develop concentration. Because if the mind is not enough, if the mind is not well concentrated, not well collected, so going for observation of other sensations can be a little difficult. Actually, you have to take the challenge. Assume that, as this report has mentioned, assume that the breathing exercise, the mindfulness of breathing happens, and you are developing concentration. Automatically or naturally, there's a sensation pops up at your knee. Then automatically, as suppose your attention is going there. Suppose if you are able to comfortably watch it, then just watch it. Don't worry. It's not, you don't need to immediately come back, because you already are well concentrated at that sensation. You are able to locate your attention at the knee now. No need to stay at the nostril. Rather, your new primary object is that sensation. And you are now wholeheartedly watching that sensation. And that is done well. Suppose now your mind is not wandering, not going to the past, not going to the future, but rather are able to watch that particular sensation. All the facets can be seen. You know how it is appearing, how it is changing, how it is disappearing. Maybe it is not just one sensation, it may be several sensations. So all new, more and more information is coming up. More and more detail is available for you. That means everything is going well. You don't need to change back to the primary object. You don't need to go back to the breath. Rather, you can start observing this sensation. You are actually investigating this sensation. That is much better rather than going to breath. So actually, even if you go back to breath, start investigating the breath rather than simply just being there. You have to investigate the breath. So then that investigation will further improve actually the clear comprehension, will further improve mindfulness, further improve wisdom. So we are actually at the beginning part, we are developing concentration, and in the latter half, we are developing the wisdom. So this is where we are merging the samatha and the vipassana. So therefore, your approach is all right. So if your mind start to scatter again, start to distract again, then you can return back to the breath and again re-establish mindfulness.
Ante, this is question number 6. Bhante, my body has bent forward from the waist or so, from the waist, not from the neck, when I have been meditating for a while. So I have to take my mind from the breath to rectify the situation. Is that okay? I attended the retreat you conducted in Melbourne and it was excellent for me. May you have the health and energy to continue with your practice and teaching. That's the end.
Tatu, could you repeat the first part?
Okay, yeah. Bante, my body has bent forward from the waist, not from the neck, when I have been meditating for a while.
Right, right. Hope this is not from Nalinka. Hope this is not from her, no?
I'm not sure, Bante. It was anonymous.
No,
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
So basically, yes. I mean, the one thing is, during the beginning of the session, we are maintaining a very good posture. The body is straight, the back straight, head straight, neck straight. So this is a kind of a ideal posture that we are establishing at the beginning. But with time, this can little adjust. So we have to allow it. Don't immediately change your posture. Don't immediately straighten it up. Then we are disturbing the process. So basically, even suppose your head little bent, even you are leaning to a side, we have to allow it for a while. Even as this one said, so you are little bending to the front. We have to little allow it. Don't immediately adjust. Don't immediately straighten it up. But suppose you are completely fallen, almost like, then you feel sort of uncomfortable and sort of certain severe pains are arising, then you understand, okay, I can't continue like this. Once that knowledge is there, then slowly adjust yourself. That adjustment also can happen mindfully. Rather than, I mean, blaming yourself or distracting yourself. So you establish mindfulness to the whole body, to this posture where the body is bent. And now you are slowly bending it up. Now, while establish mindfulness under the awareness, you are rising. You are again lifting yourself. So there is no harm by doing that. But there is another situation. So actually it depends on the practice. There are certain stages where you have to let the body to just be. Suppose you are sort of doing meditation, you are vipassana, you did several years of vipassana meditation, and there could be a situation. So you have to forget about the body. You are now completely dealing with the mind. On such situation, I mean, you have to keep the body as it is, and you have to simply be aware of the mind. So such situations are also there, but I hope my first answer might suitable for this yogi, because I don't know much details about where she is, other than the posture. He or she hasn't explained much details about his or her practice.
Swaminwanse, I got a message from her saying that not as much as Nalinka.
So. right.
Yes. Okay. So we now know for sure it's two people.
Yes.
But just a little. So yeah, I just asked whether she'd like to, I can unmute her and talk, but she said it's okay. So the question is answered.
Fine.
Question number 7. Bante, I have a question about pins and needles in the legs. My sitting posture is always the same and relatively comfortable. In a forum like this, I either don't get pins and needles or I find it easier to ignore it. On my own or listening to a recorded guided meditation, my ability to ignore this sensation is so much harder. Why is my self-control better here? How can I overcome this in my personal practice? That's the end.
I think when we do by ourselves, so we are sort of whole energy is accumulated. So now in this session, for example, there are kind of a group available. So we are in a kind of a multidimensional situation. So we are hearing someone telling something, we know that we are participating to a forum, So we know this is the particular right time frame that we are working on. So likewise, there are sort of different parameters. So I think therefore this sensation, this pinch sensation is not that governing you. But on the other hand, when you are doing it your own, there are no any other person, there are no any other involvements, then your attention is so sharp. So this pinching sensation becomes so sensitive. So because that actually indicates the mind is fairly concentrated. So you don't need to take it in a opposite manner, thinking it as an obstacle. Rather, you can understand, okay, mind is fairly concentrated. So actually what we need to understand is when the mind is fairly concentrated, even a slight sensation appears like amplified. It may be a very slight sensation. Because of our concentrated mind, it becomes amplified. So we feel it intensely. So that is a known fact. So therefore, if you can simply bear it, then it's a good food for vipassana. Because suppose someone is going through vedana anupassana. So all these vedana, all these feelings are not extremely difficult feelings. I mean, they may be very slight feelings. But for a concentrated mind, they appear like torturing. That's a common thing. Because mind is fairly concentrated. So even slight pains now appear like extreme pains. So therefore, you have to bear it. Because when you are doing it by yourself, when you are in your environment, when you are doing alone practice, then actually the mind is fairly concentrated. Therefore, these slight pains appear like very high intense. So you simply have to bear it. Take it for advantage rather than thinking it as an obstacle.
Bhante, I have a response from the person who wrote that.
Yeah.
Do I bear it by watching the pains or trying to redirect to the breath?
So, I mean, if you can watch the feeling, no harm. You can actually, because in order to watch the feeling, you need some amount of concentration. Now, this indicates you have that concentration. If you can bear it and watch it properly, taking that as the raw material, taking that as the primary object, then actually we are improving ourselves. We don't need to think it as an obstacle and jump back to breath. Rather, we can be with this feeling and watch it. We need to have a fair amount of courage. We need to have a fair amount of patience for that. If you think that you can manage it, you can go along with it.
Bhante, this is the last practice-related question. There's three more theory questions after this. They're all together though. Venerable Bhante, whenever I cannot sleep at night, I try to watch the rise and fall of stomach while lying down. Is that okay? That's the end.
Yeah, it is quite okay. Because rising and falling bring us back to the body, because it's, as you know, the abdomen or the tummy is fairly middle of the body. So therefore it's an extremely calming down process. So if you can't sleep, simply bringing your attention to this tummy rising and falling of the abdomen at that area, bring you back to the body and you can have a good sleep. So good night then. Yeah.
So Bhante, this is a three-part question, all written by the same person. So there's a bit of background before the three questions come, all on theory. Bhante, the four foundations of mindfulness are, number one, mindfulness of the body by anupassana. Number two, mindfulness of feelings, vedana upassana. Number three, mindfulness of mind, citta anupassana. Number four, mindfulness of dhammas or phenomena, dhamma anupassana. So the first question is, loving kindness meditation comes under which of these categories?
Actually, loving kindness is not in this category. Actually, Satipatthana is in one aspect. Loving kindness is another aspect. Actually, you can combine these two. That means, suppose you are doing loving kindness for 15 minutes and then 45 minutes you can do mindfulness practice, this Satipatthana. Or you can do 5 minutes mindfulness practice and then 55 minutes on Satipatthana. So likewise, you can combine. There are benefits doing like that. Or else you can simply forget about metta and then totally get involved with Satipatthana. It also doesn't mind. Because, I mean, metta is actually belonging to the Samatha practice, and precisely taking the four Brahma Viharas, you might have heard the Brahma Vihara practices. So there are metta, karuna, mudita, upekha. The metta, the loving kindness; mudita, the equanimous joy; karuna, the compassion; and the upekha, the equanimity. So you can practice these things as separate practices. Those actually have benefits. But Satipatthana is another area where we are giving more prominence for mindfulness and more into the vipassana.
Bhante, so question, the second part, what is mindfulness of dhammas or phenomena? So number four, I saw several interpretations. Please explain.
Yeah, actually, Dhammanupassana has several stages. So first, Buddha recommends to know about the hindrances. How lust arises, how anger arises, how restlessness arises, how regret arises, how doubt arises. And all these things are happening in the mind. So we can distinctly know, okay, right now the lust arising, right now anger arising, right now restlessness arises. Right now, doubt arises. So likewise, we can distinctly know how these phenomena coming and going, how they are changing, how they are behaving. So this is one aspect, knowing about the hindrances. And then knowing about even the positive qualities, bhujangas, how the mindfulness vary. Is it sharp or is it not that sharp? How concentration vary? Is it fairly concentrated or is it the mind scattered? Or how the faith arise, or how the effort arise. Is the mind fairly energetic or is it sort of lethargic? So is the mind focusing well? Is it possible to observe particular phenomena very precisely, very closely, in a proper attitude with some curiosity? Or is it in a sort of a blunt manner without much interest? So likewise, the attitude of the mind, the state of the mind vary. Maybe into the negative side when we are talking of the hindrances, and to the positive side when we are talking about the bhujangas. So these are actually, we are observing this very mind, how it is changing. And similarly, one can observe various, aggregates. How the body feeling like now, what others feelings right now, how they are coming and going, what are the perceptions right now, sanya, and how the mind does various fabrications, how mind is preparing. Say for example, you are getting a slight sign to the mind, slight sanya to the mind. Suppose your child is little far away, your mother or father is little far away. You are simply getting a little memory of him or her. Then we are adding to that. We are fabricating it. We are preparing it. We are adding this and that to it. So this is a kind of a formations. This is the sankhara. So we are watching how these processes are happening inside the mind. So all these things can be considered as Dhammanupassana. And later actually even to the truths. How the suffering, how all these things brings up some amount of unsatisfaction to the mind, how some amount of tension is built up in the mind. So we are watching this tension, we are not watching this unsatisfactoriness. So all these things are actually into the Dhammanupassana. Then probably we can know what is the cause of this suffering, what's the cause of this little tension. So we recognize, okay, this there's a kind of a desire for this, desire for that. I want things to be otherwise. I am not accepting the way it is. So these are certain understandings. That's the second noble truth, the desire. And then we have to simply let it go. And again, mind comes back. Mind again settles back. So this is in a way applying the four noble truths. So all these things actually are coming under the Dhammanupassana. So therefore, practically we can say, so once we start to develop Chittanupassana, naturally you will be leading towards Dhammanupassana. You don't need to force the mind to go to Dhammanupassana. Rather, continuous practice, gradual practice, naturally will bring you towards Dhammanupassana.
The third part of that question, what is the relationship between the four foundations of mindfulness and samatha and vipassana meditation? I'll put the English terms, so concentration and insight meditations. That's the end of the question.
Actually, we can say mindfulness practice, satipatthana, is more towards vipassana than concentration. On the other hand, there are certain components in the satipatthana which contributes for concentration. Say, for example, anapanasati section. In the kayanupassana, you know there's an anapanasati. So they are the first couple of sections actually help us to establish mindfulness and to develop concentration. So therefore, it is fairly coupled. You can't have a clear cut. Okay, this is the concentration, this is the samatha, this is the sort of vipassana. Rather, it's a kind of blend of whole thing, where we may be establishing mindfulness, and that established mindfulness leads towards further develop concentration. And with that concentration, we are going to investigation, that is the vipassana.
Bhante, that's the last question we have. We've gone a bit over time. Do we have a bit more time to ask any final questions? Do you still have some more time, Bhante?
Yeah, I am fine. So if there are any other additional questions, I can spend a couple of minutes.
So if you have any final questions, please put your hand up or send me a message. Otherwise, we'll wrap up. So I don't think there's any more questions, Bhante. I'll pass back to Arunaya and he'll wrap up for us.
Thank you, Chatumali. I think it's a good session today. It was very encouraging that there were a lot of questions and good questions. Isn't it, Bhante?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
I think last time they request to get some sort of advertisement. I think Suranga has put an advertisement also.
Yeah, Suranga has done some marketing, but
just one thing I also want to add, that whether Bhante has got any psychic powers to read our mind, because I was telling Aruna, and then I called Bhadra Aunty as well, that we can suggest Bhante to start a bit of a Dhamma talk on Anapanasati just after the practice. And I tried to call Bhante, but I couldn't connect. Bhante wasn't there. So I thought, okay, maybe we'll leave it to next time. And here we go. After the session, Bhante started Anapanasati.
I thought Suranga had that conversation.
Yeah, that's what I thought also.
No, I couldn't talk to Bhante. I tried to call a couple of times. So I thought Bhante might be busy. I thought maybe later on I'll tell him. But then suddenly we are in the position that Bante has read our mind.
So I think it was a very good session, Bante. Thanks.
Sorry, there's one more question that's just come in. I'll say it out. Yeah. Bante, as a relative beginner, when you talk about all the theories, sometimes it makes me feel confused. Mm. Is there any resource I should read or just keep practicing as I am?
Actually, there are several resources I can recommend. One, actually, I'm not sort of, in a way, kind of promoting my own book. This Anapanasati Sutta book is one good book I can actually recommend, because it is not just because I am telling it, but I am getting a lot of comments about it. So there are so many people are telling that is taking one from the beginning to the to share some advanced practice. So therefore, even if you are a beginner, I recommend you to read Anapanasati Sutra book. It's available in Nisaranani website. And again, if you are interested in Sakman Bhavanava, this walking meditation, you can read Pante Dhammajiva's book, Sakman Bhavanava book. That's also very interesting. And Guide to the Beginners, that is also a nice article. So actually theory also kind of interesting, as you said. If you are talking too much about it, one get confused. But the practice is more important, and as you practice, so this kind of a book which is giving some practical hints can encourage, can remove any doubts available in the mind, so that actually clears the path.
Bante, I have a copy of the book just to show if somebody is interested.
Right, yeah.
This is a book, and just to say that the person who's actually sponsored the book is here in this forum as well.
Uh-huh. Suranga, is there any way that we can share that book, PDF or something, with the group?
Yes, sure. Actually, yeah. That's what I was mentioning. Book is available in Nisaranane website. Once you go to Sinhala publications, it is there.
But is there an English version of that book?
No, not available.
Is there equivalent something? Is there something that might be close to it that the person could read?
Currently, I can't. Actually, there is a series of Dhamma sermons available, conducted in Kalalgoda, related to Anapanasati Sutta. That is one option. One can hear that. Or if one of you are interested in translating it, so I welcome that.
Thank you, Bante.
Yeah.
Okay, so if there's no more question, I think we can wrap up for today's session. Thank you very much. It was a good session and very encouraging. And we encourage you to write more and more about your practice and practice as much as possible. So then the time Bante spent would be worth. So thank you very much for participating, and thank you very much, Bante, for we know you are very busy with your busy schedule.
No, these days I'm a little relaxed. Thanks to Corona.
Yeah, so it was. We are really lucky to have you for this session, and even these young adults are really lucky to have you. Have your guidance, your instructions, and your experience to share with us. So thank you very much, and much merits to you, Bante.
You're welcome.
Sadhu.
So thank you very much, and we hope to see you next week, next Sunday at the same time. Until then, have a good meditation and mindfulness week. Thank you very much.
Terwan Sanai.
Terwan Sanai.
Terwan Sanai.